believe. Assault is an act, not an adjective. Your safety is not just on the gun, it is the gun. Freedom is a fundamental human right. Welcome to your show, Two-Way Radio with Bill Carnes. What do you believe? Your safety is your responsibility, not the government's, not anybody else's. Be a citizen, not a subject. Better yet, be a listener, because it's an inalienable right, not a privilege. The Two-Way Radio Show with Bill Carnes is live, right now. Call 1-800-313-9443.
And good morning, everyone. This is Bill Carnes, host of Two-Way Radio, coming to you from the home studio on Skype today. It was interesting. I got a hold of the folks at the studio this morning, and I said, you know, I got to do the show from the home studio today. And the question was why. And quite simply, my girlfriend's been traveling, and I go pick her up in a couple of hours. And I just washed my dog, who spends a lot of time in the backyard becoming a mess. And I don't like to leave my dog inside because my dog is not trustworthy indoors. So I wash my dog. I do the show while the dog stays inside and doesn't get dirty, and then I immediately leave to go pick up my woman. So there you go. That's why I'm on Skype today. I hope everybody understands. Thank you very much for all of the emails regarding the show from Friday. I appreciate that quite a bit. There is so much information out there about 9/11. It's very difficult to keep a lot of things straight. And quite honestly, there's a number of conspiracy theories that go on out there that otherwise it's kind of difficult to sift through. A lot of different ideals from people that, you could get three or four different, I guess I should say, theories on any one small portion of that entire day and the incidents. So I did my best to kind of comb through some of those things. I am by no means an expert on 9/11. However, what I do know is some 3,000 people died that day, and needlessly so. And those who caused 9/11, internally and externally, all need to be brought down. And do I believe this whole thing about bin Laden, and with all of the technology and everybody that we can find, are we still unaware of where bin Laden is? I highly doubt that. Something tells me we have a very good idea where that scumbag is at today. As a matter of fact, I read something over the weekend where his brother, one of his brothers, evidently the guy's got a dozen brothers or more, died in Saudi Arabia in the last few days. And I also know that the bin Laden family has had a rather lucrative business here in the U.S. I don't know how lucrative it's been since 9/11, but I know it was lucrative up to that point. I want to update on something. I've told you that I've been in the process of working with a couple other guys that are very close to me in the firearms training industry. And we have put together a handgun familiarization course, which is essentially for people who don't know much of anything about handguns. They want to go in, they want to touch, feel, manipulate these guns a bit. So we've put something together. It's actually going to be this coming Saturday in Las Vegas, Saturday the 19th at 11 a.m. It's going to be 2 to 3 hours. It's $25. I don't know if anybody's going to be in Vegas or anybody in Vegas is listening. And you get to go. We're going to go to Citadel Gun and Safe. And we're going to go to Citadel and actually have a bunch of defensive types of firearms out there and also some non-defensive firearms and show you the differences, what we've learned over the last many decades of our combined experience on what is good to have and things to look to shy away from, and see where the fit and feel, where your hand goes in these guns, so you can have an idea of what a defensive handgun really is all about. Stay tuned. We've got more coming at you from here at the home studio, right here on 2A Radio. I'm your host, Bill Carnes.
Rule 1, assume it's loaded. Rule 2, don't point it at anything you're not willing to destroy. Rule 3, listen to the 2A radio show with Bill Karnes. 1-800-313-9443.
Well, a appeals court in District of Columbia upholds a mandatory gun licensing law. An appeals court in Washington, D.C. has upheld the city's extremely restrictive law requiring residents to obtain licenses to carry handguns outside of their homes. The U.S. Supreme Court's ruling last year in the high-profile D.C. versus Heller Second Amendment case did not invalidate the District of Columbia's licensing requirements and even appears to have endorsed them, according to the ruling of the appeals court this last week. While the statute indisputably imposes a regulatory restriction on the right to bear arms, on its face it does not stifle a fundamental liberty, the D.C. Court of Appeals concluded in its opinion dated August 27th. The case arose out of a criminal prosecution of a fellow named Manuel Brown, who is charged with crimes including carrying a pistol without a license. On appeal, Brown claimed the ordinance violated his Second Amendment rights. The relevant law says no person shall carry within the District of Columbia, either openly or concealed, on or about their person, a pistol without a license issued pursuant to District of Columbia law or any deadly or dangerous weapon capable of being so concealed. Now, bad facts tend to make bad law, and Brown, who has been convicted of murder by this point, who had been convicted of murder by this point, was hardly a sympathetic defendant. Different facts and a different litigation may have yielded different results, and Brown would probably have not been able to obtain a concealed weapon license anyway. Still, it's worth noting that the Second Amendment Foundation filed a lawsuit against the district a few weeks earlier on a similar question, the constitutionality, post-Heller, of the city's licensing scheme. Alan Gura of Alexandria, Virginia, he's an attorney who filed the civil lawsuit. He told the Second Amendment Foundation this last Wednesday evening that he doesn't think the recent appeals court decision will make much of a difference. "We're not challenging the requirement for a license," Gura said, but he added, "there has been the ability for people to qualify for a license." As an aside, the reason that they called the district's laws extremely restrictive is not the mere requirement for a license. Not all state permit unlicensed open carry of firearms, and only Vermont and Alaska allow concealed carry without license. The reason that the district's law is so restrictive is that the law enacted in December 2008 seems to have limited the ability of the police chief to authorize any carrying of firearms for self-defense. So here we go. What you've really got is you have a law within the District of Columbia that says you must obtain a license to carry a firearm, a handgun, outside of the home. And that license must be duly authorized by the Chief of Police of Washington, D.C. However, they have also put in their own regulations, essentially crippling the police chief from being able to authorize those licenses. So they wrote a law, and then they internally neutered the ability of the police chief in order to do anything about it. So that's essentially where this case draws from. This is exactly the type of thing that brings me on the air every morning. This is the type of thing that takes all of these anti-gunners and their gun laws and puts it in a perspective. They'll follow the law, yet they'll do something subversive to make it impossible to actually carry out. And that's really where the courts are going to have to step in. And who gets screwed in the meantime? It's you and I. We are the ones who get screwed in this deal. We are the ones who get completely hosed in the process. And it is also we who are the ones who end up having to foot the bill for all of this nonsense to go on. We can't very well have a good constitutional government that honors the rights of the people when they allow different portions of the government, be it from municipal all the way up to federal, to subvert the laws and get into this regulatory scheme to deny us our rights. That is tyranny. By the sheer and simple definition of governmental tyranny, that is it. And that's exactly what happens in our nation's capital. It's also what happens within the entire state of California. It's also what happens in the state of Illinois. These are the sorts of things that need to be handled starting at our local level with these politicians and let them know we're not going to stand for this. And if absolutely nothing else, we're going to replace you with people who believe properly. Now, it's been shown that the National Academy of Science has reviewed dozens and dozens of scientific studies who have focused on looking to find out if anti-gun laws actually prevent crime. And the National Academy of Science has failed to produce a single study that was done on that topic that actually revealed that anti-gun laws have ever prevented even a single crime from occurring. Now, there was a case just recently in Ohio where there was a couple of cops that were shot with an AK-47 a week ago today, last Monday. And I'm going to get to that story a little bit later. However, the thing being that the Violence Policy Center said that 20% of all police officers killed in the line of duty between 1998 and 2001 were killed with, as they call them, assault weapons. Now, so they called for, you know, those things need to be banned. Now, forgive me if I'm wrong, but between 1998 and 2001 was the last few years of the Clinton era assault weapons ban. And towards the end of that era, if I'm not mistaken, all logic should show that there should have been less of these quote-unquote assault weapons out there. So if the law actually worked, how could it be that nearly one out of five police officers killed in those 4 years, 98, 99, 2000, 2001, were killed with assault weapons if there was an anti-assault weapons bill that was enacted nationwide? How could that work? Well, for starters, we have absolutely no idea if the Violence Policy Center, if their percentage of 20% is actually true. They create their own stuff all the time. Like they say, 86.4% of all statistics are made up on the spot. And that statistic changes every time somebody says it. Point being, if Violence Policy Center, who's not known for giving legitimate information, legitimate statistics, they lie to benefit their own cause. But they just did themselves a disservice by saying, in fact, this assault weapons ban law that was on, and this was the last 4 years of this 10-year law, and still, one in five cops that were killed on duty were allegedly killed with these sorts of guns. Then doesn't that prove that the law doesn't do any good whatsoever? Imagine that. Guys, I revealed it a couple of months ago. Violence Policy Center and Brady say that they exist to stop gun violence. It's a societal issue. It's not an issue of instrument, as they would like to think. That's like saying that, I guess, glass beer bottles cause brain injury when people pick them up and smack them over someone's head. So we need to stop that. Okay. If a glass beer bottle isn't available, something else will be, and someone's still going to get smacked over the head. It's a societal issue. You understand this? You understand that when you take criminals who are in possession of guns, you don't lump them into the law-abiding who own guns. The law-abiding who abide by the laws, buy the guns through federal firearms dealers, end up with concealed weapons permits, end up having our backgrounds checked and rechecked again, consistently reapply for these concealed weapons licenses. And then you lump some criminal who has no legal authority to have a firearm. They've been banned. They break the law and they get a gun anyhow. Then you start lumping us all together. Wow. That's incredible. That's really incredible. That's like saying that someone who is a vegetarian who decides to go after some endangered plant and eat it and somehow makes this endangered plant even further more dangerous. We lump every vegetarian into that guilt when there's only possibly a few who are doing this. Perhaps there's some sort of endangered kumquat that's out there. And they have some sort of delicious nectar to this particular kumquat. And some vegan goes out and starts decimating this incredibly endangered kumquat population until we can actually slap the cuffs on this kumquat criminal. Do we nail to the cross every single vegan that's out there because of the actions of one? No, we don't. Because it's not the fault of the kumquat. It's the fault of that individual vegan. No, use that as an example. Because criminals go out there, put their hands on a gun, and commence in criminal behavior with that gun, illegal from the moment it starts all the way through. Does that mean law-abiding gun owners should have to pay the price? I would think not. And I would think that anyone with cognitive reasoning and an ounce of rationale could actually see that. So I believe that these anti-gunners are just simply very ignorant and quite stupid people. Stay tuned through the break. I'm your host, Bill Carnes, right here on 2A Radio.
Have the alcohol and tobacco. Leave the firearm to us. Right now, live, the 2A Radio Show with Bill Carnes.
There's recently been a federal court decision on open carry. Recently, a fellow by the name of Travis Yates was stopped in Madison, Wisconsin, for merely carrying a firearm openly. Now, if you will remember, Wisconsin is one of two states that does not allow concealed weapons permits, Wisconsin and Illinois, but Wisconsin does have a law for open carry. Open carry is legal throughout the state. Now, you should know that Brad Krause's experience, never mind, I don't even need to bother telling you about that. It has to do with the police department up there. There are other police departments who continue to stop armed citizens in the state of Wisconsin and search them for no legal reason, despite guidance from the attorney Van Hollen of Wisconsin last April that says, do not do that. What's happening is people are carrying guns, and the cops are stopping them for merely carrying a gun. The police are skating on very thin ice and are inviting a federal lawsuit. This is a high-stake poker's game, kids, and we know who's holding all the aces. It's the gun owners. There was a federal court decision in New Mexico dated September 8th by Matthew St. John versus David McCauley and six unknown officers of the Amalorado Department of Public Safety. And that addressed the legal risks of police that they face when approaching someone doing nothing illegal and detaining them. The Attorney General's April 20th memo in Wisconsin discusses what is a proper stop and search of an armed citizen in paragraph 8 and what is an illegal stop and search of an armed citizen in paragraph 9 of that memo. Although this federal court decision does not directly affect Wisconsin courts, it is clearly the handwriting on the wall for them, and they need to follow it and reiterate that the Attorney General's warnings to law enforcers needs to be heeded. Now, I thought that this decision was interesting because the court goes even further to address the community caretaker function of the police, and that it might be invoked as a defense only so long as the officer is entitled to make a forcible stop. Merely receiving a call from a hypersensitive person that someone is armed where it is lawful to be armed, is not reason enough to believe anyone's safety is in danger in the absence of any suspicious or threatening behavior. This seems to me to be the big disconnect with law enforcement training. The 911 operators need to ask more questions about the callers to determine if there's any criminal activity before sending out one or more officers. In this case, Mr. St. John was in a theater watching a preview to a movie, a perfectly legal activity, and the responding officers could have been trained to discern the difference between lawful and unlawful activity and a person who's sitting there quietly watching a movie being quite lawful. The court also found that merely being armed does not automatically make a person armed and dangerous, which would be necessary to justify a limited protective search or a Terry stop that justify officers disarming an individual. And this is another huge training challenge. Now, I guess I should go back. In fact, being armed does make you dangerous if, in fact, you're trained. It's really the mental status. Of course a gun is dangerous. It's dangerous to anybody that would try to bring any of us harm if we're the ones carrying it. It's supposed to be. It's a good deterrent. As a matter of fact, it's a wonderful deterrent. Now, the police believe they have qualified immunity, however, that only shields them from civil damages insofar as their conduct does not violate clearly established statutory or constitutional rights of which a reasonable person would have known. To determine if qualified immunity applies, a two-step process is applied to the circumstances. First, there needs to be a determination if there was a violation of a federal constitutional or statutory right by the police. In fact, more of a power. Then it needs to be determined if that right was clearly established. For right to be clearly established, it must be sufficiently clear that a reasonable police officer would understand that what he's doing violates that right. Now, here's the thing. This qualified immunity in this case, most constitutional attorneys and scholars, as well as myself, as well as Dave Champion, as well as just about any other person I would think that broadcasts on RBM, would let you know that when an officer takes an oath of office to uphold and defend the Constitution of the United States, that there encumbers them upon understanding, knowing, and being familiar with said Constitution. Therefore, all of the rights spelled out within said Constitution. Therefore, qualified immunity does not exist and can be argued thusly in any court. If you are a law enforcement officer, you really need to decide if you're willing to follow your department's policy when meeting a lawfully armed citizen. If it's contrary to this decision and the Attorney General's advice, then what you should do is follow the advice and or follow the law as written. Ignorance is no excuse. Qualified immunity will be beaten in court. Stay tuned, folks. There's more to come right here on 2A Radio. I'm your host, Bill Carnes.
This is RBN, the Republic Broadcasting Network.
Radio with Bill Carnes, 1-800-313-9443.
Now, it's absolutely no surprise whatsoever that Paul Helmke of the Brady campaign is a complete turd, absolutely as ignorant as the day is long, and hates guns. Not only hates guns, hates gun owners, and takes the opportunity to dance in blood every time a crime is committed with a gun and someone bleeds. He will literally tap dance through it. When blood's running in the streets, there always seems to be a group of gun ban extremists ready to dance in it. This time, Paul Hemke and the rest of these goofballs are dancing in the blood of two Ohio law enforcement officers. This last Monday, two Columbus, Ohio police officers were injured when a marijuana-growing suspect fired on them with a semi-automatic AK-47 rifle. Now, that's as the report shows. It'd be interesting to find out exactly what the rifle was, whether it's an AK or not. Because by default, any time cops are shot at with a semi-automatic rifle, it becomes an AK-47. They're even still today saying the Oakland police officers that were killed a few months back were killed with an AK-47. It was not an AK-47. 2 days later, after this shooting, Brady campaign against gun violence president Paul Hemke staged a press conference in Columbus and claimed that the incident should serve to remind people how easy it is to buy assault weapons. Now, from the Columbus Dispatch article entitled Shooter Incident Stirs Gun Debate, it says the following. I think you saw the consequences of that Monday, Paul Hemke, president of Brady Campaign to Prevent Gun Violence, said in a Columbus appearance just last Wednesday. We are making it easy for these things to happen. That's what he said. We're making it easy for these things to happen. Now, the gun lobby stance of treating shootings like unpreventable natural disasters, Hemke said, has politically paralyzed this country from taking simple measures to protect the public, such as background checks to make sure felons or the mentally ill can't buy guns. He says this, other countries have figured it out. We can figure it out too, Hemke told a group of about 50 people who gathered to honor Columbus Mayor Michael B. Coleman and the City Council President Michael Mental for standing up to the gun lobby's extremist agenda by enacting an assault weapons ban in 2005. But in 2008, the Ohio Supreme Court voted in a 4-3 decision to strike down such city bans, including one prohibiting concealed weapons in Columbus City parks. Why? Because the way these laws were written, enacted, and enforced were considered unconstitutional. This is what Coleman said. This is what the mayor of Columbus said. You don't need an AK-47 to shoot a deer across the street at Broad and High, a couple of streets. That's what he said during the downtown ceremony, noting that lawmakers made it legal to carry guns into city parks, but not into the state house. There's a limit, and I think Ohio has gone beyond the limit. We need to strike it up again and make this a nationwide movement. So there you go. Anti-gunners trying to make it a nationwide movement. Now, I don't know why he would ever say you don't need an AK-47 to shoot a deer across the street. AK-47s are not designed to shoot deers across streets. It's just that's not what their purpose is. The purpose of an AK-47 is to shoot people. That's why it was designed. It was designed as a military weapon by Anatol Kalashnikov and put into service in 1947. AK, Automatic Kalashnikov of 1947. That's what AK-47 stands for. It's a military weapon. It's designed for shooting people. That's what it's for. Why do we need these? The Second Amendment is about self-defense. It's not about hunting deer, Mayor Coleman, idiot. It's about shooting people. Now, it's about shooting people in defense. If this pot grower, first of all, he's growing pot. As far as I know, that's illegal. If he's growing it, he's probably smoking it and or selling it. Again, two more illegal acts. In the commission of these felonies, you're not allowed to possess a firearm. Yet another illegal act. Let alone shooting police officers, again, an illegal act. So, every single thing this guy did was already against one law or another. Yet he continued to do them. Do you think writing more laws would have prevented this guy from doing anything illegal? Do you? Because if you do, you're an idiot. If you believe that writing more laws would have prevented this guy from having broken any of the prior laws he was already in the process of breaking, you are an absolute fool. If he had more laws on the books, he'd just be breaking those laws in addition to the ones he's already breaking. Now, Helmke of the Brady campaign, who is in Columbus to award Mayor Coleman and the guy who was in charge of the city council, Mental, for their failed attempts to disarm law-abiding citizens via gun control laws, neglected to mention or explain why, during the time Mental, his ban was in effect, incidents with so-called assault weapons continued to occur in the city of Columbus, including a high-profile case involving former Ohio State Buckeyes running back Maurice Claret. Not to be outdone in the blood dance, the Anti-Gun Freedom States Alliance issued a press release which quoted a study conducted by the radical extremists at the Violence Policy Center, claiming that, and this is what I mentioned earlier, one in every five law enforcement officers slain in the line of duty between January 1, 1998 and December 31, 2001 were killed with assault weapons. Now, again, even if those figures were true, the study would only go further to prove that gun bans don't work to stop criminals. Because during those years mentioned in the violence policy study, 98 to 2000, the federal Clinton assault weapons ban was in effect. The truth, of course, is that Helmke, Coleman, and Mental are just trying to take guns out of criminals' hands, right? What they're doing is trying to take guns out of your hands. If that works for criminals as well, that's wonderful. Again, here's some information from the Ohio Dispatch. What they want to do is fix it so that nobody can have guns, said Gerald Valentino, secretary of the Buckeye Firearms Association. Unfortunately, there are going to be criminals who do things with guns, but the 36-year-old Pickerington resident questions why the city officials never mentioned the case in which citizens use guns to protect themselves and save lives. Coleman and the city, quote, are doing everything they can to limit people's ability to protect themselves. You bet your butt they are. That's exactly what they're doing. I read a story so unbelievable, and I don't even know where I ended up putting it in my files, that they're trying to revamp the form of community policing in a town in the Midwest somewhere to where police will be able to respond anywhere in the city within 3 minutes. Within 3 minutes. The reason being, they don't want people to be armed. They want cops to respond within 3 minutes. Now, this is the challenge I have for you listeners. The next time we go to break, in about 8.5 minutes from now, we're going to go to a commercial break for 3 minutes. There will be 3 one-minute spots by any number of our sponsors here on RBN. Great companies, by the way. During that amount of time, imagine an attack coming as soon as I go off the air and you make a phone call to 911. As soon as I come back on the air, the cops will have arrived, and you would be defending yourself without a gun for those 3 minutes against an attacker. And you tell me if 3 minutes is a quick enough response time. Also keep in mind that the Supreme Court has already ruled that law enforcement have absolutely no legal requirement to have to provide protection to any individual citizen. So even if they could get there in 3 minutes, they have no legal requirement to have to provide you or anybody else any protection. They could drive right on by. Now, you may remember me speaking of this goofball Cass Sunstein, who was in front of the Senate to be confirmed as the president's latest czar. But since he's gone through Senate confirmation, he actually has more authority than the others just appointed. He was approved. Now, this is something we should all be outraged over. Because hunters and gun rights activists are lining up right now against Cass Sunstein, of Harvard Law School professor, and Barack Obama's regulatory czar. Now, Sunstein's official job would be to run the White House Office of Information and Regulatory Affairs. And in a 65-35 Senate vote last Wednesday evening, to end the debate over his nomination, pushed him closer to the job. So, in fact, he hasn't been officially elected. It's just, it's been a 65-35 vote to end the debate. All that remains is a full Senate vote, and that might even happen today, in fact. Now, a guy by the name of John Van Ness, the Baltimore Hunting and Fishing Examiner, and Kevin Rott, the Grand Rapids Hunting Examiner, are decidedly against Sunstein's nomination. The Washington Times editorialized against Sunstein specifically on Second Amendment grounds. And Coppin State University professor Victor Morosky, a Liberty Features Syndicate writer, authored an op-ed piece detailing his concerns about Sunstein in the Anderson Valley Post. Here it is. For the first time in the nation's history, the U.S. Supreme Court has ruled that the Second Amendment creates an individual's rights to possess guns for non-military purposes. Okay, that's what Cass Sunstein said. On the heels of the Van Jones debacle, which ended rather shabbily, and just after midnight Sunday when nobody was looking, it appears round two may be unfolding as early as today, as the Senate is expected to take up Sunstein's nomination. Obama is in trouble with health care reform, as he would call it, despite his numbers following this last Wednesday speech before Congress, and nominating far-left extremists to position of authority in his administration, and that is raising some serious concerns among mainstream American citizens, including the ones who voted for him 11 months ago, that instead of a president, they elected a putz. Sunstein is an animal rights extremist who has advocated a ban on hunting and suggests making it possible for lawsuits to be filed on behalf of domestic animals against humans. He's argued that the individual rights interpretation of the Second Amendment may be a contemporary invention. Yet he recently insisted that he firmly believes in the individual right to bear arms. He did write a rather thoughtful, though lengthy, and at times confusing, analysis, of the Heller decision for the Harvard Law Review that challenges both sides of the gun rights debate. So it's excellent. This guy is so twisted he can actually argue with himself and needs no one else. However, he seems to fail miserably on understanding the Second Amendment. As the Washington Times editorial recalled, he sent a letter to Senator Saxby of Chambly of Georgia in July that stated, quote, "I strongly believe that the Second Amendment creates an individual right to possess and use guns for purpose of both hunting and self-defense." And then adds, "If confirmed, I would respect the Second Amendment and the individual rights that it recognizes." Sure. Well, which is it? Does the Second Amendment create an individual right or recognize it? I know the answer to that question, and so should you, while Sunstein evidently has conflicting thoughts. This is the guy that wants to ban hunting. This is the guy, one of the other guys, that wants to ban guns. This is the guy that wants to give animals the same rights as human beings. Now, would that make us politically cannibalistic if we were to continue to eat meat? Not physically cannibals, but politically would we be cannibals for raising livestock and eating it? Has this guy never gone to 4-H? Has he never heard of 4-H? What is with this type of thinking? How far off of the beaten path can we possibly get when it comes to this Obama character putting more and more extremists under the White House flag. How is this possible that this continue to go on? How long are we going to stand for this? How long are we as Americans going to continue to see our rights trampled upon? How long are we as Americans going to continue to allow this out-of-control federal government to continue to grow? A government that is powerful enough to give you anything is also powerful enough to take everything away. Thomas Jefferson was right. If we were to go more than 20 years without an uprising against some load of BS coming out of the government, then we're going to have lost it. The last uprising against the federal government was called the Civil War. Now, the more and more I learn about the Civil War and why the Confederate States wanted to secede from the United States, I realize that the term the War of Northern Aggression was, in fact, pretty appropriate. Now, a lot of people that look at it would say, well, it was the Confederates that fired the first shot. Aggression is not begun with bullets. It culminates with bullets. Imagine if there was gun control in 1775 and 1776. There would have been no American Revolution. We would all be British citizens. Do not allow this sort of thing to continue. Now again, during the commercials, we're going to be there for 3 minutes. Decide if that's a short enough response time for police to come to your door. Stay tuned. We'll be back. I'm your host, Bill Carnes, on 2A Radio.
Right to listen and take action shall not be infringed. 2A Radio Show with Bill Carnes is back. 1-800-313-9443.
The story comes out of Columbia. It's out of Greenville, South Carolina. There's a fellow by the name of David Allen who's running for a little-known office known as Adjunct General. And here's a bit of his playbook. Page 1, how to win public office in South Carolina. The answer, give away a big gun. Page 2, get your buddies together at the shooting range and throw a party. Unconventional? Yes, it is. But Allen of Greenville is grabbing attention for a little-known statewide office, the Adjunct General. The Adjunct General is in charge of the South Carolina's Army and Air National Guard and serves on the board of visitors for the Citadel and holds many other related responsibilities. Major General Stan Spears, a Republican, holds the position, but he hasn't said publicly whether he'll seek another term. He has held the job since 1995. Allen, also a Republican, will hold his Machine Gun Social fundraiser from 1 to 5 p.m. on September 26th at Allen Arms Indoor Range in Greenville. Allen is also a combat veteran who served in Korea and Vietnam. The campaign will give away a $700 semi-automatic AK-47 after the event. To get a chance to win the gun, you'd have to sign up for the giveaway by filling out an entry form at Allen Arms. And keep in mind that the owner of Allen Arms is in no relation to this guy who's running for office. Entrance must be residents of South Carolina. This event is all about celebrating our Second Amendment right to keep and bear arms, Allen said in a statement. We are celebrating these rights in the hopes the liberals in this country never get the chance to take our Second Amendment rights away from us. Tickets to the Machine Gun Social are $25. Clemson University political science professor David Woodward said the idea for the AK-47 giveaway was original. It sounds like something out of Huey Long's Louisiana, he said. I have to applaud. On one portion of the country, in Ohio, we have them going against AK-47s. However, in South Carolina, We have them pro AK-47s, and I love it. What a great way to get gun owners and people who are otherwise riding the fence to realize, wow, maybe these things aren't so bad. And perhaps not all elected officials are anti-gun. It really is quite confusing when we have people to swear and uphold and defend the Constitution of the United States of America against all enemies, foreign and domestic, and yet they violate the provisions of the Constitution by trying to quell our rights and our abilities to do things such as peaceably assemble to redress the government, to keep and bear arms, and to actually provide for our own states' rights when it comes to overly umbrelling and encompassing federal law.
I'd like to close by saying, to those of you within our government, we will be watching you in Congress, the executive and judicial branches all very closely as we organize to save our freedom, liberty, and country. We will not become the subjects of governmental rule.
Bill will be here tomorrow. Will your freedoms? The Two-Way Radio Show, 7 a.m. Pacific, 9 Central, Monday through Friday.